Hello, I'm Damien Wilde, Editor-in-Chief of You. Andy Burnham is one of the UK's best-known mayors, for good reason too, and we were delighted when he agreed to speak at our recent Future of Manchester event, and even more pleased when he agreed to an extended, wide-ranging interview. We talked COVID, of course, and devolution, as you would expect, but we also touched on the nature of community and the recent Black Lives Matter protests. His view? All this will alter cities forever, changing premises and spaces, and delivering other overdue welcome changes too. Manchester and other cities will be less car reliant, he says, and more focused on that important word, community. Real estate can help. We've already had a great first session talking about the future of the office, the future of the high street, and perhaps slightly inadvertently, the future of the importance of digital infrastructure to UK PLC as well. I hope that this next session will run more smoothly. Now, over the last 3 months, we've seen the best of leadership through this crisis and perhaps some of the worst too. And I'd certainly put much of regional and local government in the first category. Vocal, present, articulate and pragmatic, many mayors and council leaders have stood out, certainly amongst politicians. And none more so than Andy Burnham, Mayor of Greater Manchester. And I'm delighted that he's able to join us this morning. Welcome, Andy.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Well, relieved you put me in the in the right category.
Beyond tenterhooks, yeah. So I'll start with the same question that I began with our opening panel. You know, much of the discussion now as lockdown eases is about returning to the office, is about returning to the pub as well. But I wonder whether we're underestimating just how changed a city like Manchester will be and will have to be post-COVID.
Yes, I think it will change in the short, medium and long term. We won't, of course, see a quick return to normal, whatever normal might be in the future. The simple fact of capacity on public transport on the roads will change the way people work, and the commute will never be the same again, I don't think. I'm not expecting there to be a complete return of office-based city centre employees this year, a partial return possibly. I think, you know, this will be a gradual process of change, I think, coming out of this. I think people will change how they work. The idea of the 5 day week working week with a 9-to-5 commute, which, to be honest, Manchester has had really a very traditional working week. Finally, I think that's about to change.
Okay, and that's a mixture of home working, a mixture of office-based working, perhaps more task-based. But the knock-on effects of that will be, they will be impactful on high streets, on shops, on leisure as well. On that balance of the economy, is that something that you've started to, can you plan for that, and have you started?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, one of the messages I am sending out is, you know, please begin to think about your return to your offices, particularly in the city centre, because the vibrancy of the city matters. And it's really important that we support the bars, the restaurants, the leisure outlets. You know, that is important to the city in the long run. So yes, while we might change the way we work and perhaps the number of days we spend in the city commuting, I still think it's important to keep people coming in to the city, and that's certainly one of the messages I'm sending to organisations and businesses. For my own organisation, you know, the minute the government guidance changes from work at home if you can, I will be saying, yeah, we need to get back to support the city. So I'll be laying out a template to say, this is how our organisation will return, possibly, let's say, 25% of staff to begin with. And then build up slowly over 2020 into 21. But obviously not people commuting in the old way. You know, not everybody coming in to start at 9 o'clock in the morning. I think the notion of a flexible start and end time to the working day needs to be embraced by everybody, because quite honestly, the capacity won't be there on public transport to support the commute, nor will we be able to get enough cars on the roads.
Yeah, I was rightly pulled up in the first session by someone who posted a question to the panel, which was it's not simply a debate between public transport and private car-based transport. It's about active travel as well and cycle lanes. And is that a part of Manchester? Is that a bigger part of Manchester's future?
Massively so. We have the wonderful Chris Boardman, who's our cycling and walking commissioner. I appointed him back in 2017, you know, in advance of all of this, wanting segregated, safe cycling and walking provision to be at the heart of a modern city region. What COVID will do, I think, is just accelerate our plans and actually scale up our ambitions. The city is going to change, like other cities around the world. We have been building for the car for too long, for decades, actually, in this country. And that's got to change, because a modern livable city can't base itself around the car. I think what you will see in Manchester and other cities, I'm sure, is much more pedestrianisation of the kind of core of the city. And Manchester City Council are developing plans in that direction, combined with more planned routes through to commute into the city from the outer boroughs, so that commuting by bike is a realistic option for people. And, you know, I think we're going to see electric bikes increasing. The dominance of the car, I think, might be ended by COVID.
Okay. And we've talked about transport, we've talked about offices, and we've only touched on retail and leisure. And when you talk to retail and leisure operators, and certainly ones I've spoken to, they're quite anxious about what the future holds, you know, in terms, you know, their very survival. And, you know, the ongoing need for social distancing, even if it comes down, will make life very difficult for them. Is that one of your headline concerns?
Well, certainly, you know, I've got my eye on the sectors that will most need support. So hospitality is clearly one, but retail is another, and its impact on the high street. So, you know, I kind of have concerns about the change that will come as a result of this. However, there is a more positive way of looking at it, isn't there? In that, you know, a future where we all stare into laptops all the time and order everything through them and don't really go out very much. Well, we've been living a bit of that, haven't we, for the last 3 months, and I'm not sure people have found it massively attractive. I think they crave the physical experience of being in a shop and wandering around and having a coffee and then carrying on shopping, or they crave meetings in the office. It's not that much fun just ordering your beers online and waiting for them to arrive. You know, I think, you know, people are going to want to come into towns and cities. I think that the issue is, though, they're going to have to be better planned, more attractive places to be than perhaps they are. So I think there's going to have to be some rethinking of that. You know, how can you make these places a destination that people want to go to? And I certainly think a trend that had been kind of developing pre-COVID is going to accelerate now, and that is the conversion of retail space into residential space. And I think that will be particularly relevant to the bigger towns, if you like, that surround Manchester city centre.
And what needs to change to make that happen? You know, there's talk from central government of a radical shake-up of the planning system that perhaps doesn't give a greater role, gives a lesser role to local authorities. Is it a planning issue that needs sorting out, and is that proposed solution the right solution?
I'm not so sure about that, to be honest. I think it's more a capability issue. You know, can you bring a number of players together to reimagine a place? You know, placemaking, I think, is the issue here, not so much the bureaucracy of the planning system. So can you create a vehicle that brings the transport people together with the housing people, with the leisure, so that you can say, right, how could we kind of create a new master plan for this place? So this is what we're doing with Stockport, with the Stockport Mayoral Development Corporation. And of course, a mayoral development corporation of that kind allows for certain planning processes to be accelerated. But I think for me, that's not the main attraction. The main attraction is you get a kind of a gathering of people that looks at a town over a much bigger sort of footprint, says, right, you know, how do we make this place really work for people? How can we put in the high quality segregated cycling provision to drive value into the new kind of homes that we're hoping to build here, the green space that people will want? So, you know, we're very lucky to have Lord Kerslake chairing the Stockport Mayoral Development Corporation. And I think as long as we can kind of bring the industry with us, I think you could see that as an exemplar for regeneration coming out of this, not the government mandating its own development corporation and bypassing local councils, actually one that kind of does it bottom up with really strong support from all of the players in the locality. And yeah, that's what I'm trying to do with Stockport, you know, extending Metrolink to Stockport. I think there we could create a kind of a template for how a British town could move from what it currently is today, which is the very 20th century sort of situation, to a completely new future.
And is that a model that can be extended from towns into cities as well?
Yeah, I mean, any mayor like myself has the powers to set up a mayoral development corporation. And I've said to the 10 boroughs, you know, nothing is stopping me. If you want one, we'll set one up. I mean, obviously, you'll have to pay for it rather than us, because, you know, we wouldn't be able to just keep paying. But that's the deal, basically. There's risks, obviously, for politicians, because it carries my name, you know, the Mayoral Development Corporation. So I keep saying to Stockport, if it all goes right, I'm sure they're going to claim all the credit. And if it starts going wrong, it will be the Mayoral Development Corporation. But no, I'm only joking. I mean, I would offer it to any of our other 9 boroughs. And of course, to the city. You know, it feels to me to be the right way to go when you're kind of sometimes development in Britain goes scheme by scheme. You know, you build a scheme here on this patch of land and then build another one here. What it doesn't do is placemaking enough. And I think we've got to get seriously in the business of placemaking coming out of this. What we want are new communities built for people rather than cars, digitally enabled, zero carbon, connected to high quality integrated public transport. That's what we want.
Okay, and to make that happen, and to make that happen quickly and effectively, do you need more devolved powers from government? And just to sort of ask the second half of a question a little while ago, is now the time for a radical shake-up of the planning system as well? Would that be an enabler?
I mean, possibly, but I think I remember being in Gordon Brown's cabinet back in 2008 when we were in a similar moment about economic gloom and what could we do. And I think it's always an easy target, the planning system. Oh, if only we could change these rules. And to be honest with you, possibly there are some changes that could be made to help, but planning rules are there for good reason. You know, you've got to balance people's interests here. It's not just, you can't prioritise development over the consideration of existing neighbourhoods. You know, there's balances to be struck. By all means, try and accelerate it. And that's what the Mayoral Development Corporation is doing. You get more results, in my view, if government was to fund brownfield remediation. That would make development move more quickly than tweaking planning laws. More powers over, let's say, the rail system. You know, we have land in Greater Manchester owned by Network Rail that is primed for development that we can't access. You know, that would accelerate development. So yeah, we do need funding and extra powers from government, but we also need creativity from the property industry. You know, I do say this, and I'm conscious of my audience, but I do need to say it. It's time, you know, the industry needs itself to challenge itself and become more creative, more innovative. You know, think about places rather than schemes, you know, and then work with people like myself, Andy Street, Sadiq, to sort of, you know, come together with kind of more imaginative, ambitious plans, rather than, you know, perhaps going to the easier sides for development.
You see too much of that across your desk, do you?
I think there's easy pickings a lot of, I think. You know, people go to the easy sites, the green sites, you know, and people then go on about planning laws. Well, there's a reason why they get bogged down in planning processes, because they're not often not what the public feel is right. You know, why are you building on there when there's this gaping brownfield site here where we would support you developing? And I think that's what I'm kind of getting at here. You know, we need a new partnership, central government, myself, regional and local government, with the industry saying, right, you know, where does everybody support development? And let's go to some of those more difficult places, get the government money in to clean up the land, get the transport authorities buying into it to kind of help with the infrastructure, and then work in a kind of partnership to bring forward imaginative schemes that everybody will support. And, you know, that's been my experience of working on the Stockport Mayoral Development Corporation. There's cross-party political support. The public in Stockport seem to support it because, you know, for years they've been sort of driving through that part of Stockport underneath the railway arch, just thinking, you know, this doesn't really, you know, this is could be better than this. So I think if you go with what the public, go with the grain of what people, communities want, and you put pride back in, into the heart of towns, the planning thing will just go woof like that because no one's going to oppose it.
And it's more necessary than ever, isn't it, given that councils themselves, including Manchester, are at a very the very real risk of going bust?
Well, yes, they are, in if things stay the same. So we did a very careful evidence-gathering exercise across our 10 districts to find out, you know, what have the costs been of COVID, but also what's the lost income. And bear in mind, you know, our 10 councils are part owners of Manchester Airport. So, you know, there is a significant hit, not just in sort of the cost of supporting the public through COVID and the loss of, say, parking fees. You know, there is other impacts here. So as things stand right now, if nothing changes, we would have a £368 million deficit in the whole of our budgets across Greater Manchester. That's a cumulative figure for all 10 districts, Transport for Greater Manchester and the Greater Manchester Combined Authority. And it's not a worst case scenario. That's a kind of likely outcome if things stay as they are. And the reason I say that is just to be fair to the government. I know they're talking about providing more support for local government, so that's welcome. But we just felt it was necessary to put on the table the scale of this challenge. Because let's be honest, councils will be critical in leading recovery, and if they're not funded to cover their basic costs, you know, you're going to see planning departments sort of decimated, so the staff won't even be there to, you know, fast track the developments, etc. So it's a pretty dire situation, and I do think you know, the government just needs to shore up the finances of local government, because that's the foundation upon which recovery will be built.
And in more normal times, we might have talked about the importance of devolution and greater revenue-raising powers for local and regional government. But this trumps that, doesn't it? This is more urgent than that process.
Yes, it does. But it doesn't mean the other thing isn't important either. So the M9 group of mayors, of which I'm a member, this is the nine big city metro mayors across the country, had a meeting with the Chancellor last week. And, you know, we had a really positive discussion about the devolution white paper that the government has promised. And I was pleased, obviously, by your introduction, because it's not just myself. You know, all the mayors have been prominent in this time. And I think, hopefully, the role is becoming part of the British political infrastructure. And I think this is a moment for devolution. Recovery always will be better if it's led bottom up rather than top down. And I think there's many voices in the government that get that. I wouldn't say all, but I certainly kind of feel that there's an understanding now that this might be a moment to accelerate devolution. And none of us would blanch at, you know, the accountability that comes with tax-raising powers. You know, none of us are sort of saying that we would be frightened of that. What we just need first is more control over the public money that's already spent in places like Greater Manchester. I want the Department for Education to peel its fingers off its kind of funding, which it kind of clings onto very tightly, and the DWP and all. Let us start to control what's already there and integrate it and get rid of the Whitehall silos and make it work harder for places and people. And then on top of that, bring some extra financial sort of firepower that we might be able to deploy. You know, if English cities outside of London have been held back, you could say, well, certainly since the Victorian period anyway, cities like Liverpool and Manchester, you know, we've got so much potential. You know, we did run ourselves going back to that period, and, you know, the civic ambitions were massive, and they still are, but we just haven't had that ability in recent times to put it into practice. But I think this is going to be a devolution moment. That's my prediction. I think the government realised. Let's be honest. I'm not making a political point here. Trying to run everything from Whitehall during the response phase hasn't worked particularly well, has it? You know, this kind of centralising, we'll decide everything and then we'll kind of let a contract with some entity that will run it all. It doesn't work. It's any delivery is better when it is more locally owned and driven from the bottom up. And I think there's now an understanding that the recovery phase needs to be more like that. And people have seen the limitations of a top-down centralising approach in this response phase.
And does that also lead to perhaps less of a focus on place per se, and more of a, there's probably been more talk than action on place in some senses, but perhaps less of a focus on place and more of a focus on community? Because it's not just it's not just looking at cities post-COVID, it's looking at post-George Floyd and integration and inclusion as well.
Well, I tend to agree with you. It does. And even one step beyond sort of community, people, start with people, and then you go into communities and then into places. And this is the problem with levelling up. You know, levelling up has been code for sort of concrete and steel so far, you know, infrastructure. And I don't think you level up places by simply sort of laying kind of new roads or rail tracks. You level up when you give people hope and help and ambition. And that, I think, has been missed out of the levelling up conversation so far. And whenever I meet a government minister, I say that. And actually, that's not just sort of, kind of wishful thinking. This year's challenge is a people challenge, not an infrastructure challenge. You know, we've got kind of thousands of people on furlough in Greater Manchester who may be about to lose their jobs. We've got young people who, if they're just left to lose their apprenticeship without something else, will have scars, as we know, that will take many years to heal. I think this generation of young people potentially could be more disrupted than any generation since the wartime period. And the message I'm giving to government, the people challenge this year, is absolutely urgent. And we need, in my view, a young person's guarantee. We need funding for conversion courses for people to move from kind of, let's say, industries that are struggling to digital, green construction, all of that kind of thing. Massive programme of intervention in the labour market. Yes, it might be costly, but it'd be more costly to let thousands and thousands of people, you know, go on to the scrap heap. You know, if we're not careful, the 2020s in the north of England could be worse than the 1980s. And we have to avoid that.
OK, well, our next session at 11:15 is on becoming more people-centric and the importance of the industry. And I know you have to go, Andy, but very quickly, we have seen real estate step up in many ways in the last three months, whether it's helping construct Nightingale hospitals or providing parking space for NHS staff or even places to stay for NHS staff. Are there things that you would like to see it do for the short term over the next 12 months?
It has stepped up, definitely, and I would absolutely endorse what you said, and I would just want to say thank you to those perhaps on this call who've done that. You know, we have seen those brilliant examples of car parks being provided, and, you know, hotel provision has been fantastic for people who've been sleeping rough. You know, we've had a huge programme across Greater Manchester, lots of partners involved in it. I'm very lucky that Tim Heatley, Capital and Centric Chair, is the Greater Manchester Mayor's charity. I know he's been using some of his buildings to support the collection of food and toiletries, etc., to support people. So, yeah, the industry stepped up, and I'm really grateful to it. What more could we do now as we turn our minds to recovery? Well, here's a thought. I don't know whether this makes sense. For the reasons I gave at the start around the return to the office, it's being a gradual process, not an immediate thing. There's going to be a lot of office space around. And I just wonder, is there a scheme that we could work on to provide free or subsidized startup space to people who've kind of been thinking over this period of lockdown that they might start their own business. So I could provide the, here's how to set up your own business, you know, through the growth company in Manchester. And could the industry kind of convert some of the space that's there to provide hubs that we could use to incubate a generation of new businesses? You know, could the industry be at the heart of a drive to make this a kind of moment of business creation? And I don't see why not. And I'd just be interested if anyone on the call sort of feels it could, then let's have a talk about that.
Okay, well, that's a great clarion call to end on, and we'll lead to our next session at 11:15. So please come back and join us then. But in the meantime, Andy, thank you very much.
You're welcome, David. Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks to Andy Burnham, one of the best regarded politicians around right now, and as you could tell from that interview, for good reason. EG's weekly interviews reveal the thinking of those driving change in real estate today. Don't miss them in the magazine, on Radius Data Exchange, and with many of them on our podcast channels too.